Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what a big town. Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's Brian behind the glass. And it's a Thursday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Beautiful day. Beautiful
it
day.
It really is.
First day that Brian's working this week. He's a little scared of the snow, I guess. He's soft. Can't work through the snow.
I would call that good luck with when I scheduled my PTO, but sure, if you want to label it soft, that's fine.
Don't let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Look, if you want to label it soft, that's fine, but I got lucky.
Where are you at? So it's torn between Brian and I. I'm just calling him soft. He said it was fortunate PTO timing. Where are you at on this, Blankers?
I mean, if you're a dedicated employee, even if you had requested the time off, when you knew the trials and tribulations that the front office was going through, you might make a switch or volunteer your time.
No. I don't owe this station anything.
I am
owed the money that I am paid or the allotted time I'm allowed to be or supposed to be here.
Slightly overpaid.
Man. Have you seen my check? I doubt that.
I haven't.
I mean, you could have got in on it. You could have made it a threesome with Dell and Sean.
Is that something you'd want to see?
No, I don't want to see it. I just said you could be a part of it
because they had the adjoining living room
and the hotel set up.
Yeah. I'm going to move on after that.
Yeah, my days of rooming with two other guys are over.
Evidently, theirs aren't over when it comes to roomies.
Although I don't know about your Xbox Live thing. I mean, you might be having something going on there.
What could I possibly have going on there?
You're in a virtual room with two of your closest friends.
It's not a room. You can chat, but there's not a room.
So
you can chat while you're playing a video game.
Greg Grissom got fired by the Texans.
We'll just moving right along.
We'll talk about that. Well, he used to play video games with Cal, and now they're not going to be playing video games anymore. But we'll get to that a little bit later. I mean, he's team president. How much do we care about the team president?
Never quit.
Probably why he fired Grissom. Maybe Grissom quit, or maybe he just didn't like what was going on as the president of the team.
I think Greg was a lifer.
Not anymore.
No, certainly not anymore.
Not anymore. Bob Nightingale reporting that the Astros still maybe interested in Alex Bregman, which Joe Espada had that quote last week that kind of got buried that, hey, we're still talking to Alex Bregman. Never say never. Kind of like Al McNair.
Never,
that's a mantra in Houston.
Never quit.
Yeah, that's what the Astros are doing with Bregman until he's signed by a new team. We'll get to all of that stuff later. How much of that's even real? We'll discuss that a little bit later. But the Rockets, how about the Rock? Good basketball in the city yesterday. Houston Cougar basketball holding Utah to 36
Smash.
Points, which ties the fewest points that have ever been scored in a Big 12 regular season game. Their fewest point total since 2011. And then I think it's like the second fewest points the Cougars have ever, third fewest points the Cougars have given up, like in the shot clock era or something like that. They go to Kansas on Saturday. So I'll be in Lawrence tomorrow doing the show, and then Allen Fieldhouse
Saturday evening
will be a fun game. And then right after that game, because Houston played at 5, the Rockets played the Cavs, the best record in the East. Now, the Cavs were a little shorthanded. They had three rotational pieces that were hurt. But the Rockets win that game, Blankers. Good win. Good bounce back victory, especially.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, I had tweeted out before the game, it's going to be a good barometer for the Rockets team, because you're playing the team with the best record in the NBA, one of the best teams in the East, and you just kind of wanted to see how in these kind of matchups how they stack up. And you're right, I was a little disappointed with the guys that were out for Cleveland, but it was a good game. It was a really fun game to watch. The Rockets were in control most of the game, and then what a debacle at the end of the game. This isn't the first time that we've seen Tari Eason do something not so smart, fouling a jump shooter late in a game. But I thought, oh, my God, all this work, all this goodwill, all this good showing against Cleveland, and they're going to blow the game on a fouling the jump shooter three, up by two, and then one of the best free throw shooters in the game just kind of did you a favor.
Yeah, that was Yes, like that one specific possession was weird. Like I'll have a holistic take in just a moment, but that was a bad play by Tari Eason.
It was awful.
Like I love his game. You see how important he is. He was big time in that game yesterday. He was very, very good. The Rockets played well without him, and he's one of their key figures. But that closeout was not smart. Nope. That was low IQ basketball. Fortunately, Garland missed two of the three free throws. It's funny though too, because like the whole narrative there is, well, he's getting three shots and the Cavs are getting the ball. They're down by two. So, like, whenever you have the foul and then it's upgraded to a flagrant, even, like, Craig and Ryan were talking about it, it's like, well, now the Rockets are going to have to foul on the inbound. Like, the whole thought was he's going to make all three.
He's a 90% free throw shooter.
There was zero thought of him missing just one. Like, there was the automatic assumption that he was going to make all three free throws. They were going to have the lead. You were going to have to foul, play the whole foul game. They didn't even put zero thought into him missing one free throw, much less two. And then you get the stop at the final play, which kind of a good look for Donovan Mitchell. Yep. Kind of a good look. Didn't love that look there a little bit. But my bigger view of this, like the one possession, yes, that was not very smart. You got very, very lucky to finish the game the way that you did. The Rockets were dreadful the whole fourth quarter, though. They were dreadful. It was a 19-0 run for the Cavs in the fourth quarter. They went over 6 minutes without scoring the basketball in the fourth quarter, and they were still outscored by 10 points in the fourth quarter despite the win. This is a team, though, in the past, whenever they get hit by that run, a 19-0 run, a 6.5-minute scoring drought, this is a team that in the past would have quit, they would have rolled over, they would have died. There's no way they would have won that basketball game against good competition like Cleveland. The fact that they were able to take a 19-0 punch to the face and go 6.5 minutes without scoring, yet find a way to win the game, to me is actually a sign of growth.
Yeah, it's all been on kind of like a learning curve, right? Because I've been harping on the fact that as good as they play for 42, 43 minutes a game, in playing as good as they played all season, they've had a hard time closing teams out and putting like the final foot down on the pedal to just get to the finish line. It doesn't matter how you get there. And they got lucky last night, but it has been getting better. And what I liked most about last night was it was multiple guys. They're down six, and Van Vliet is the guy that gets you back with the two threes. But then they're going to Alpi. They're making sure that they get other guys involved. And it's not just a one-man show of relying on somebody to either carry you or not in the case of like a Jaylen. And and the other thing that was great is that they can now go eight deep and get contributions off the bench from guys that are understanding their role more. I mean, while we were not doing games last weekend, you had a 10-rebound game for Cam Whitmore. That doesn't happen. That's not supposed to happen. You're getting Steven Adams with offensive rebounds. You're getting all the things you're getting, so it's a deeper team, a more experienced team with every game like this. And yeah, you would have ideally liked to close that one out a different way, but at least it's getting better.
Yeah, I don't think they win that game last year.
You're probably right.
I think that this is a sign of growth for this team. And yes, you didn't play in the fourth quarter the way that you need to play. But you beat Cleveland at the end of the day. You hand the Cavs only their seventh loss. Yes, they're without three rotation guys. But then you hand them their seventh loss. You took their best punch in the fourth quarter. You did not play your best in the fourth quarter, yet you found a way to win that game. And that's what good teams do. Like, good teams find ways to win games whenever they have bad stretches, whenever they get punched in the face, and they did that. Amin Thompson, another great game. 16 points, 16. He had 9 offensive rebounds in that game. 9 offensive, yeah. 4 assists, 4 steals. I love Amin Thompson. He's my favorite player on the team, without a doubt. Without a doubt, he's easily my favorite player on the team.
Mine as well. I mean, him and Cam. And I really like the fact that Cam is doing more. Looks like he's starting to mature more and get out of that me stuff, which I like. But with Amin Thompson, I saw Lance say, is it fair to say this is a men's coming out party? Well, you haven't been watching you haven't been watching for the last several weeks, because since he's been inserted in the starting lineup, even before that, he's a double-double waiting to happen with a chance at a triple-double if things just fall right. He has been phenomenal. He's fantastic. And he continues to do more and more for you to think the same thing that we've been harping on all year. He's the best player on the team. Like, he does so much to fill up a box score and a stat sheet. But at the same time, he's doing it unselfishly, because they're not calling plays for him. They're not running the offense through him. But he's finding all these different ways to make a difference and be a positive force for his team. That's why, I mean, I don't know what the hell they're going to do when Jabari comes back, but I'm not going to worry about it, because he's been kicking ass.
Probably just bring him off the bench.
Maybe. I'm sure he's not going to like it, but that's, you know, you got Wally pipped, buddy.
Yeah. You know my feelings towards players not liking their roles. They can shut their mouth and know their roles is what they can do.
I mean, when you look at the fact that, and here's the thing. I mean, from an Udoka standpoint, I don't think not to the level of like a Thibodeau, but I don't think he really trusted a lot of guys on his bench in the past. Now with Tari back, too, he's got guys that can turn it up on defense. He's got guys that bring energy off the bench. He's got guys that can rebound. And they are a much more well-rounded team because of the depth and the fact that he's got guys he can go to.
Yeah, this is it's a fun team. Do they have their weaknesses? Sure. They're not a great shooting team, but if you get a bunch of offensive rebounds, you might not have to be a great shooting team. Like, I don't really care what your shooting percentage is. I care how many points you're scoring per possession. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
no, you're right.
Yeah, I that's the point of basketball.
I think this next schedule is going to test them a little bit.
Well, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
You're on the road. You're playing some good teams. This is where, you know, you literally have to show that you can do it at home. You've had a good run here, but this is one that's going to test them to kind of show exactly who they are going forward.
Man, I didn't realize it was four straight on the road. At Cleveland, at Boston, at Atlanta, at Memphis. If they...
Memphis wants to get...
Was that the stretch you were talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, so those four in a row. I didn't realize that they also play eight of their next nine.
On the road.
Why? Is it that little rodeo thing they're doing?
It's the quirky schedule thing. No, I think because they're done. I think the bull thing is done.
Is it already done?
Yeah.
Ackerman never got his bull.
Yeah, he still hasn't.
They talk about that a lot.
Yeah, way too much.
Yes. They talk about that a lot.
Yes, but at the same time, you look at it and say Atlanta's beat some good teams. They're actually quietly playing really good basketball. Memphis, you've kind of handed it to them to where they want to get back at you. But Cleveland and Boston, you're playing the two best teams in the East. Mm-hmm. And so with those games on the road, you come back for the Nets, and then you're back at it.
Yeah, at New York, at Brooklyn, at Minnesota, at Dallas. Eight of the next nine. That's nuts.
And aside from Brooklyn, there's going to be some real testers in that stretch.
You want to look at the four-game stretch or the nine-game stretch?
I mean, you call it. We can do both.
Let's look at nine, because eight of nine. I actually think eight of nine on the road is more significant than four in a row on the road. Both are significant, but I think that the worst of two evils is the eight of nine.
You and I both know it's literally like a nine-game road trip, because you come home, you wash clothes, and you're back at it.
It's almost like you're on the road.
Right.
Like, it's basically you're on the road. So, at Cleveland, at Boston, at Atlanta, at Memphis, home for Brooklyn, at New York, at Brooklyn, at Minnesota, at Dallas. What would be bare minimum win X amount?
I'd like five.
Your bar's high.
I'd like four and five.
I was going to say three.
I was going to say, I like 500. If you can go, but there's nine games.
Yeah, it's going to be
so if you go nine games total, I think you should get both Brooklyn games. I'd like them to get four wins, and if they could get five, it would be a big success.
So if they get four, you're pleased.
Yeah.
All right, let's monitor it.
Yep.
Let's monitor this little, because it is going to be a difficult run.
You're thinking three?
I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I think if you go 3-6 in those nine games, it's not the worst thing in the world. Now, in a tight, congested Western Conference, you might lose some ground.
Because Dallas needs that, Memphis needs that, you know, and then the Eastern Conference teams you're playing they're the top of the top.
No, for sure. But, I mean, you're not really worried about the East as much.
No, you're not. But I'm interested competition-wise, yeah.
Yeah, what do the Rockets need to do in that nine-game stretch? Yeah, I think if it's three, it's not the worst thing in the world. Obviously, I feel better with more wins. I'd be crazy not to. Texter Cam was so hot. That Cam, so hot right now. Cam. I would have liked to see him in the game down the stretch when they were struggling to score. How about Cleveland going zone defense for a majority? And that's not the first time that teams have thrown zones at the Rockets. I think Memphis did it.
It's not.
They're going to see more of this.
Yeah, it's not just us that has said they need more shooting and noticed the fact that Reed Sheppard or not, where they thought was going to be helping the situation, they're not a great outside shooting team. And teams know that because of their athleticism and the fact that they can get the rebounds on both ends and they can get out, you're going to see a lot more zone, and there are going to be a lot more challenges where the old Russell Westbrook thing of, I dare you to beat us from three and see if they're willing to take the bait.
I had a split thought in my mind, because I watched it this morning whenever I woke up, but I had a split thought in my mind that that maybe you use Reed Sheppard against the zone. And it's like, there's no way Ime's going to do that. Ime's not going to play one player against one specific defense. He's going to go with his guys. And he's so worried about the defensive side of the ball, too. Rightfully so. I don't bother. It doesn't blame me at all. All right, 713-780-ESPN. So people want to weigh in on the Rockets. We'll allow you to do that. 713-780-3776. We'll get to the Gresham stuff a little bit later. The Alex Bregman stuff. A lot of stuff going on in the NFL. We'll do that as well. Bad Take Boulevard. 713-780-ESPN, the HR&P listener line. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston. We're on Twitter at ESPN975. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. Brian is scared by snow on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Jalen Green, let's have that conversation too. Back-to-back games where he hasn't shot it great. Is the heater over? 713-780-3776. It's the B's, ESPN975 and ESPN925.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You found the Killer Bees. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He is Blank. I am Branham. We are the Bees. ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 713-780-ESPN. A texter says 11-5 will get us right at 40 wins before 20 losses. If we can do that, we are an elite team. 11-5 is going to be tough over this stretch.
That is a tall order.
That is a tall order. Now, if they do that, I still would hesitate to call them elite. I would say that they're really good. I don't know if this Rockets team is elite.
No, I think we talked about it the other day. You look at this team, look, the arrow is pointing up. The future is bright. But they don't have any playoff experience, and we're still trying to figure out, like, when you look at the teams that are top of each conference, they have at least one guy that you know is their go-to superstar guy. It's almost, it's not a slap in the face or a negative of the Rockets, but they're still trying to figure that part of it out. They are playing better team basketball. I like the fact I don't think they care who gets it as much as they did in the past. But when you look at some of the top teams on either side, they've got two guys that are just bona fide go-to get a bucket guys that you're still trying to figure out who they are on the Rockets.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't call them elite even if they go 11-5. They'd be really good. They'd be really good. Maybe the second best team in the Western Conference if they do that. Hesitate. I mean, elite. I hold elite for very rare error. I'm not even sure I call champions elite. Like, to be elite for me is like a once.
You wouldn't call a champion elite? I mean, that's I'm trying to, one of one.
Yeah, I'm trying to talk myself through this. Like, what okay. I consider elite. Like, I'm trying to brainstorm this.
It almost sounds you're talking about your own perception of overall talent versus results on the field or court.
No,
because champions
like
one of one.
I think it's a championship pedigree where you can see it, like, on any given night, whoever plays them is either going to be the underdog or they're going to have their hands full. And more complete in the fact that, like I said, you've got guys that you can just get a bucket at any time from.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm trying to define elite, though.
I can see what you're saying. Like, the year the Broncos won the Super Bowl, was it 2015, 2016? No one would call them an elite team.
Right. And like,
so
the Celtics last year.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But like, the Celtics last year, are they the elite of the elite? Like, maybe I'm moving the goalpost by saying the elite of the elite.
I think it's the Celtics last year and this year. I think with a healthier, almost healthy Porzingis, when you have four maybe four, maybe five go-to guys on your roster that are legitimately the kind of guys I'm talking about, I think that's elite. I look at the Cavaliers and say, they're having a hell of a season, but are they elite? I think that the record supposedly says they are, but I think they have a lot to prove.
It's tough for me whenever you've had, like, dynasties, especially, like, in all sports, but this conversation is basketball, right? Like, recently we've had the Warriors dynasty, mm-hmm. we've had the Jordan Bulls dynasty. Like, the Spurs dynasty, like, I don't even know if I would put the Spurs in that conversation.
Yeah, they won every other year for, like...
No, I'm not saying it wasn't a dynasty, but I'm saying, like, the elite. Like, would I put the Spurs in the same category as Golden State? I don't think I would. Would I put the Spurs in the same category as the Bulls? No chance. So, like, I consider those teams elite. Miami? I don't consider, like, a one-off championship team elite.
You think the Spurs dynasty team was better than the Heat teams that had LeBron, D-Wade, Bosh, and Ray Allen?
They beat them.
The Heat
did
beat
they,
them.
Did they have one series against each other?
They split. Yeah, they split. They won one. Yeah.
Well, what Golden State did over the body of work was better than what the Heat did.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm saying Golden State versus, Miami versus San Antonio. Like, from an elite standpoint, Ginobili and Parker weren't considered elite. Duncan was.
Right.
When you look at that Miami team, LeBron's elite, D. Wade's elite, Ray Allen, a lot of people thought was elite. Bosh, some people thought was elite.
Eh.
Yeah, I was not. I'm not in that.
They had
I'm not
two
in
elite
that club.
Players on that. Yeah, they had two elite players on that team.
Probably Marvin says Spurs absolutely elite. Branham out of his mind. I'm not saying the Spurs weren't elite, but I'm saying are the Spurs equal to Golden State's run? I would say no. Are the Spurs equal to the Bulls' run? I would say no. Do I think that they're elite? Yeah.
But did the Spurs have more titles?
As elite than Golden State? That,
yeah.
I don't know.
I think they did.
I think they did.
I thought they had six.
Did the Spurs end up with six?
I thought the run with Duncan ended with six titles. I could be wrong, but I thought they've at least tied the. I would bet they at least had four, which would tie the Warriors with Curry and Clay. But
yeah, but do they have the regular season record?
Well, the year
they have five.
They had five. I mean, the year the Warriors set the regular season record, they didn't win the championship.
No, I know. I didn't say that they did.
I know, but
I just asked if they had the regular season record.
I mean, no, but I don't even really care about that season.
Warriors had four,
title.
Spurs had five. The thing with the Spurs, though, is spread around so many years, over 15 years.
Doesn't that make it? So I don't know. Maybe that makes it more elite. My mind.
5 and 15 is like the longevity. I think that's what you're saying.
4 over 4, 8. So they won more percentage, a higher percentage.
I think they both are. I think they're both going to.
Yeah, they probably
I
are.
I think you're going to look at both of them as two of the better teams in the history of the league.
Yeah, but I think when you're comparing the two between San Antonio and Golden State, I think majority of people would say Golden State.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's recency bias. I wouldn't. But
I think that's part of it.
Maybe so. Maybe so. And I'm not saying majority is right, but I do believe Golden State would have a higher approval rating of elite than San Antonio would.
Yeah, I think if you ask most NBA fans today who would win in a hypothetical matchup, people would say Steph and Clay's Warriors.
Yeah, so I hold elite to very, very rare. And I think elite's a relative term, though, right? Like, somebody else's definition of elite might just be the top five players that currently play, right? Like, I think it differs from person to person.
Yeah, we have that conversation every year when it comes around to Hall of Fame. There are levels even inside the Hall of Fame. There are the guys that either were or should have been unanimous votes, and the guys who barely squeak in on, you know, their last time on the ballot. So there's levels amongst all of these. I mean, it's really just a matter of where you draw the line.
I think The other thing that we got to think about, too, because it's a really slippery slope when you start when you say, would the Bulls team beat the Warriors team? It's different eras where the game and the rules and the way the game was officiated changed. The Bulls era was extremely physical, and you could literally grab guys and forearm guys and do a bunch of stuff. Golden State was more of a – they're more of like a – I don't want to say finesse, but polished and more like on the shooting. You just – you know, you get guys that are just – a lot of the guys across the board were just elite shooters, and Klay Thompson and Steph. You had Jordan. You had Pippen. They could put a stranglehold on you defensively, and they were physical as hell. And so it's tough to do those matchup type things because Golden State played in a totally different way the game was played than maybe even the Spurs were still physical, and they were more like fundamental.
Yeah. I mean, I would consider both of those teams elite.
Oh, yep.
But a one-off champion, do I consider elite? Probably not. Sidetrack there, but that's okay. Texter, a huge plus to me is the Rockets are the only team in the league to beat both OKC and Cleveland. That might be kind of scheduling or coincidence, but it is a good thing. Like, you beat the top team in the West, you beat the top team in the East. At the very least, it shows you that you're capable of beating anybody in the league.
Yeah. Yeah. No, look, I think that when you look at people questioning how good are the Rockets, really, that's at least one of the feathers in their cap is to look at it and say, hey, we've gone up against the best in the league. Cleveland, we beat. Oklahoma City, we've beat. You know, Memphis is a top four team in the West. You've already won the season series, and I think they've won all three games against Memphis. So you look at it and you say, against elite competition or the better teams in the top four in each conference, those wins are going to mean something when people are trying to evaluate you or give you the credit that you think you deserve.
Yeah. The 713-780-ESPN, another texture, could the Rockets be the Pistons team that won in 04? They didn't really have a star. They were just super balanced.
And, yeah, I mean, they beat the hell out of you defensively. And you're right. They were just, I mean, they had guys that knew their roles.
Shut your mouth.
I mean, Ben Wallace didn't have to touch the basketball offensively, but he was going to hold everything down defensively. Rip Hamilton was elite coming off screens and shooting the ball.
See, I think that team was underrated. I think that team was underrated offensively.
They were deep, too.
They were, like, the Rockets, I don't know if they have. I mean, Şengün's pretty dang good offensively.
Mm-hmm.
Green can be. Green's streaky. When Green's good, he's good.
Mm-hmm.
But like that pissed. Like Chauncey Billups could give you a tough bucket. You mentioned Hamilton coming off of screens. He was deadly there.
Yep.
Prince was a knockdown shooter. Rasheed Wallace was a really good low post player.
Both sides like, of the ball. Sheed was underrated.
You dump it into him, like you're going to get buckets. Now, maybe that's Alpi. Like maybe Alpi is the Rasheed. Jalen's probably has more upside as a scorer than anything Detroit had, but his consistency is nowhere near those guys.
No, and like you said, they were elite shooters. I mean, you don't give them the credit. A lot of people don't give them the credit, not you personally, of Rip and Chauncey were just, I mean, Mr. Big Shot for Chauncey, but you need a three, they got you. You need a mid-range, they got you. Those guys were deadly when they had the ball in their hands and you needed a bucket.
Yeah, I like that Pistons team a lot. All right, Jalen Green, speaking of Jalen Green, who's on that heater, obviously, was doing really good, bunch of points, all that stuff. Last two games, last night against Cleveland, 4 for 16, 2 for 6 from 3, 10 points. Against Detroit, the 11-point loss on Monday, 8 for 21, 2 of 8 from 3, 19 points. Is the heater over? Is the real Jalen Green back?
I think the biggest thing is we don't know who the real Jalen Green is because it seems like there's a pattern developing here. I think I tweeted it out when he was really on fire going, is this another run like last year? And was it March or April where I think it was March where you're like, will the real Jalen Green please stand up? Because this is what you've been waiting for. Now, this year we thought, okay, he did that last year. Now he's really kind of out of the gates and he's really killing people. Maybe this is the final step where we see the real Jalen Green. Now, after the last couple of games, you're scratching your head again going, well, what is he truly going to be? We know it's not, you know, it's not even a contractual thing anymore. It's what's he going to be for this team? What role does he play?
Yeah.
Because you got other guys that you know are going to defend every night. Tari's going to defend every night. Amen's going to defend every night.
I mean, Jalen won't get on you defensively. I think Jalen's defense is taking a step.
It's better. It's better, right? But I'm saying, but you don't look at him night in, night out going, he's one of your best defenders. You look at him for his scoring because in a lot of ways you need it.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, other guys have been stepping up, but you expect him to give you 20 a night.
Yeah, the thing is, if he's not going to have that scoring night, I'd rather him not shoot, which is kind of like...
Well,
I mean, he didn't shoot a ton yesterday. He only took 6 threes. I think he's more team
shots?
Oriented. 16.
Yeah, see, I mean, he's going to get the volume of shots up. Maybe they're not as many threes, but he's still going to shoot it 15 times a night.
Yeah. I mean, when his shot's not falling, he's not the same player. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, this is ultimately what we always talk about with Jalen Green, is whenever he's shooting well, he's going to look really good. And when he's not shooting well, we're going to wonder if you can win at a high level with him as your best perimeter scorer. He's streaky.
He is. And I think that's, again, part of the vulnerability of saying what they are now doesn't translate to what they're going to be in the playoffs. And if it does, it means that they're not there yet.
Yeah. I'm still a Jalen Green fan. Every player has ups and downs. There's no doubt he has ups and downs, but you can be very honest about a player, too. Jalen Green is a streaky three-point shooter. Jalen Green is a streaky shooter. And with his style of play, if he's not having a good shooting night, he's going to have games where he scores 10, 12 points. And can you live with that being your best perimeter scorer if you have huge aspirations, which the Rockets are ultimately going to have?
Yeah, I think that the one thing that you when you look at Jalen is he doesn't know who he could be yet. Because I think that when he really realizes, hey, as I continue with my career, we've talked about the fact that anytime I go to the basket, I'm a plus scorer that is really, really hard to stop. But when those nights happen where he's not scoring from the outside and the shot's not falling, he hasn't figured it out yet to go, I could still help this team by just putting my head down and getting to the basket, yep, whether I pass it or shoot it.
Yeah, last two games, he's combined for 2 free throws. He didn't go to the free throw line one time yesterday. Now, they did have kind of a tight whistle, or a soft whistle, rather. Like, they weren't calling a whole lot.
Yeah, it was pretty rough for a while.
But if you're going to be a guy who's a 20-point-per-game scorer, and he is, he's still at 21.5. But when your shot's not falling, you get to the line. And the last two nights, he's not done that. Texter saying people overlook Jalen's defensive efforts. I agree. I think he's taken a pretty big step with his defense. Is he as good as a man? No. It's a little different than Tari, because Tari's like kind of like a combo 3-4 type that's going to rebound a lot. Like, he's not defending on the perimeter a ton, especially against like shooting guards. But I wouldn't have him ahead of Tari as your best defender. Wouldn't have him ahead of Brooks. Maybe fourth.
I was going to say the top
maybe
three
fifth
are
if you put slam, Jabari ahead
the top
of him.
Three. And Fred's an underrated defender for a point guard. Mm. But you look at his ratings; they're
slow.
Pretty damn good, though.
I mean, but if you look at Alpi's ratings, his are good. And Emade subs him out in big defensive moments.
Brooks, Tari, And Amen are your three best defenders.
You said Brooks, Tari, and Amen?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think there's any argument. Mm-mm. Argument. Number four might be where the argument's at.
Yeah.
Jabari and Jalen.
Because, like, even again last night,
you might throw
Jalen was getting – they were running high screen and roll to get Jalen onto Donovan Mitchell. And he was holding his own. I thought he was quickness. He was beating him to spots so he couldn't drive.
He's scrappy.
I thought he was doing pretty well.
Yeah, I'm probably sleeping on it a little bit. He is scrappy. All right, 713-780-ESPN. I keep reading this over and over about how the Texans got the offense figured out at the end of the year. Are we buying that? Did the Texans get the offense figured out at the end of the season? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Houston's independent voice for sports talk. Listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
He's Blank, I'm Bradham. 713-780-ESPN. This mic is moving. It's possessed. What are you giggling back there, Brian?
Sean's talking crap behind the scenes.
Sean doesn't say anything funny.
About who?
About me. No, he's. It's an inside joke from the bullpen, but...
Oh.
Mount Rushmore plus one?
No, it's in regards to this song and something that's not flattering for me. I'd rather not dive into the details.
Sean! Get in here. We need to know. We need to know the details. Give us the tea here, Mapes. Sean's putting on the headset.
So we're talking about rookie quarterbacks in the playoffs, and I said I don't trust rookie quarterbacks in the playoffs.
Same.
Obviously, Jane Daniels has kind of proven us a little wrong. Whatever. And Brian, on the other hand, picked, I think, all of them to win or cover, go over their passing totals. And I said, hey, Brian, I heard you like them young, which is what Kendrick Lamar says in this song. And I'm, of course, talking about 25-year-old rookie Bo Nix and 24-year-old rookie Jane Daniels.
Diddy was about the action.
Diddy didn't say that, too? No?
I don't think he said it.
Oh. Bought it.
Don't talk about it. Be about it. That's what Diddy was.
Diddy's an actions over words kind of guy, unfortunately. Okay, I get it. Yeah. We'll grade the joke, Blankers.
Which one?
Mapes.
It's okay. I'll give it a 5.
I'll go 5-1 on the joke from Mapes. Not bad. It's above average.
Bundle up, Sean. It's cold out there.
That's not that insulting to you, Brian.
No, because it's obviously, when you hear the story, it's very clearly, you know, just fun. But, yeah, anyway.
Not so bad.
I didn't think it was worth digging into the details, but, you know, Sean laid it out for you.
Not so bad. All right, the Texans fired Greg Grissom today. We'll get to the offensive thing in a minute. But Greg Grissom has been fired as the president.
Never quit.
That's what happens. You know, whenever you don't get to the conference championship, whenever your offense underperforms, whenever your offensive line is really bad, who do you fire? The team president. Everybody
never,
knows that.
Never.
Look at there. Yeah. Cal McNair. What do you think Greg Grissom did to get fired? 713-780-3776. Wrong answers only? 713-780-3776?
Any answers only. If you didn't know, because that's not a name that's as prevalent and is out there as like...
You don't think our listeners know who Greg Grissom is?
I don't.
713-780-3776 if you've never heard who Greg Grissom is.
I'm curious because I don't think they do.
Really?
Because he wasn't
I don't
that...
think so. I mean, well, Jeremy knows from our conversation before the show, even I was like, wait, who's that?
Yeah, but you're a casual.
Okay, right. Of course.
I feel like everybody knows who Greg Grissom is.
I don't think so.
Up for 3 days of lunch.
Unlike,
shots off.
I am, my bad.
Unlike when Reed Ryan was president of the Astros, or because who's the president of the Astros now from a business perspective? I don't even know. But Reed Ryan was front. That's my point. Reed Ryan was front and center. Tad Brown was front and center.
So was Jamie Roots. Yeah,
and Jamie Roots was the same way. They could not. They loved the microphone. I don't think Greg Grissom was a guy that sought the interviews. He did an interview when they asked him. But he came from being a sales guy to that job where I don't think he was used to doing the media stuff.
Yeah, I don't. I mean. We don't see what a president does, right? Like, we don't see the behind-the-scenes stuff. We don't see how competent they are at their job. All we see them is on the, you know, behind a camera every now and then. Maybe some people never heard of him. Maybe I'm overestimating how many people know who he is, the popularity of Greg Grissom. So, like, I don't know if he's did a good job or not, but this is, look, the Texans all of a sudden have been firing a bunch of people. They fired Roots. They fired Easterby. They're firing Greg Grissom, who's only been on the job for, what, 2-3 years tops?
Grissom?
Yeah.
In that top position?
Yeah, because when did Roots leave?
Jamie left right after, I think, even they thought that with Bill O'Brien getting fired, it might get him to stick around. But he butted heads with Jack and with Bob, Bill O'Brien. So,
but he was around after O'Brien.
Not long.
I don't think that long.
Maybe another year.
At least. Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's a good amount
maybe
of time.
Another year. But for the most part, he had already made up his mind that he was going to write a book and do other things. And
February 21.
Okay.
So if...
So Grissom was been with the organization for at least a decade.
Years. Yeah, but as president.
Yeah, but in the president for 4 years, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder why they fired the guy.
I think that kind of in a Jack Easterby type way, I think that Hannah might be doing some more things than she just being a spokesperson and sitting next to Cal.
You think she's being a little cutthroat, Hannah is?
I don't know about cutthroat. I think that a lot of people associated Greg with the old regime. And they've kind of turned the page to thinking they've got a new regime now with D'Amico, with Nick, with the kind of from a football perspective. And then as that kind of comes back over to not letting Jack go and just clean house on the business side, that Greg was old school.
One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish.
The old regime. And I think that they're looking more for their own person to kind of take the new regime.
He ghosted Brian, by the way.
Still hasn't responded. Still hasn't responded.
Who, Jack?
Yeah.
That's not surprising.
I think you're onto something, Joel, though, because I think this could be Hannah maybe trying to distance Cal from all the people she didn't like being in his ear before she got more involved. And this is kind of pushing out all those people. And this is obviously highly just speculating on my end. But this looks like Hannah pushing out all the people that were in his ear before that she didn't like, now replacing that with only being her. Which I think is overall fairly, at least, I think it's probably a positive, because obviously the results since she stepped in have been a very, very, very positive.
Yeah, I know some peoples.
Stop beating around the bush. Let us have the tea.
No, I know some peoples that have said that, you know, Hannah is looking to kind of maybe do more and put her imprint more on. I don't know if it's what you said. I don't know if it's Greg wasn't, you know, like, having the relationship to talk to Hannah. I mean, you only knew who you reported to, but I think that Hannah is kind of liking the role she's got and looking to do some things to kind of get her kind of people in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we don't know. Wrong answer only. Gresham was fired because he beat Cal in a karaoke contest. Greg got fired because he told Cal he couldn't play video games on the floor at work anymore. That'd probably be Hannah. Wrong answers only. He got fired because he liked him young, Chris and Humble. Come on, Chris. That's Brian's thing, apparently.
No. That's we're not going to make this us. A running joke.
Brandon T., I've never heard of him, so there you go. Mm-hmm. I don't know who he is, but he got fired for not firing the offensive line coach. There you go. Another didn't know of him. Haven't heard of him, says another texter. I you know what? This is my fault. I thought that the Hive was a little smarter than this. I thought the Hive was a little more intelligent.
You're gonna
put it on them? They don't know. They're ignorant.
They're not ignorant. They don't care.
No, they are ignorant to who Greg Grissom is. Otherwise, if they weren't ignorant to who Greg Grissom was, they would know who he is.
You're factually correct in that we were ignorant to who he was, but I would also echo the sentiment of who cares?
No, sure. The both things could be true here. But yes, that is the definition of ignorance.
Yes, definition, yes.
Yeah, they are ignorant to who Greg Grissom is. They do not know. They're unaware. Somebody
would
said
you say...
Who's a fat guy in his underwear living in
Greg
his
Grissom?
Mother's basement?
No, the people don't know who Greg Grissom is.
No, I would never say that to the Hive. The Twitchers, yes. I would say
who's
that to the Twitchers.
A fat guy in his underwear living in his mother's basement.
It's kind of Cal McNair.
Is that Saban?
Yeah, it's Saban. It's Saban when he called us to talk about the Twitchers. He saw our Twitchers talking on our Twitch. That kind of is Cal, except in his mother's basement. He's in his mother's front office. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
That's the dream, Professor. That's the dream.
Which, by the way... Talking about like Hannah gaining control, which maybe is a good thing. Like, I mean,
it might be.
The trajectory
so
of the organization
so
has gone up since we think Hannah took over the reins and Wapod Cal McNair had him on a leash. But I think this is why Kerry McNair tried to sue Cal for the rights for the team. I really do.
You think he doesn't get along with Hannah?
Yeah, I do. I mean, totally guessing here.
Sure,
but,
this is all guesswork.
Yeah,
but
actually, you know what? I can't remember who Kerry's attorney was. Was it Busby? I don't remember.
I don't know.
I remember in the legal note or whatever, like they send out this legal stuff. So like this is the reason we're doing this. I want to say that it came out that he was not happy with the power that Hannah was securing within the Texans.
I mean, if that's true, it makes a lot of sense. But he doesn't. But what everything you read was he didn't want any part of the team. I think he wanted to get the ownership of the team because he knows the control of that team and all that money is a powerful thing to have. But I don't think that from what I had been told about how the family operated, even when Robert was alive, that he was a guy that was doing his own thing that didn't want to do the football thing.
Yeah, but you can totally understand why somebody would want the ownership of the team.
Oh, hell yes.
Yeah,
and especially when you see what Cal was doing.
And I want to say he still has ownership stake.
It would make sense.
I think it was about majority control.
But Janice is still with us, so.
Sure, but she's no longer the owner. She signed over that to
Cal.
Yeah. Not Kerry. Cal. He got fired for microwaving fish in the break room. That's a bad move. You can't do that. I don't microwave fish in the break room. I just bring my fish soup already warm. Grissom beat up Toro over an Uncle Ben's drink. What is an Uncle Ben's drink?
I think they're thinking gentleman.
Yeah, oh. Must have been a gentleman.
He didn't throw the H's up, which good on Gresham, like this little thing. That's so corny. Like, right? In the throw up the H's.
I don't know. It's part of the rebranding. It's worked. Throw up the H, flip some burgers.
Greg
throw
beats,
put on the chains.
Greg beats Cal High Score on Guitar Hero 3 on the song Through the Fire in the Flames on Expert. That's why he was fired. Beating him in video games.
You don't think they're playing Call of Duty?
I don't know. I don't know what their thing is. The only Grisham I know is from CSI. Never heard of him. Never heard of him. But he probably unplugged Cal's game before he was able to save.
But he deserved to be fired.
I remember whenever I was a little like 8 years old and people would do that. I would be so mad.
Yeah.
Or hit the reset button.
Reset
like,
button.
I want to play. Yeah, hit the reset button.
Yep. He beat McNair badly on Xbox. He tried to hit on Hannah. I don't know if Greg Grissom has that kind of dog in him.
Nah.
I don't think Grissom has that kind of dog in him. I wanted to bring Dave Cudley back. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Why did Greg Grissom get fired? Wrong answers only. And let's get to the offensive conversation. Joe Mixon, we got it all figured out. Did they really? Did the Texans really figure it out offensively? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ocho, what's up, guys? Tuning in as I explain why Billy Wagner should be in the Hall of Very Good. Dang, Ocho's got some hot takes.
You know what? Mad Dog was on that, and then he stopped himself.
Really?
I hate that. Yeah, Mad Dog Russo's like, yeah, you know, he was like, I think CC was a horse. He deserved it. Obviously, Ichiro deserves it. He goes, Billy Wagner. He goes, well, not today. Maybe for another time, but I'm not going to do that today. I'm like, why would you do it at all?
Yeah, especially if you want to say Wagner was in the Hall of Very Good, CC Sabathia
I
should
think
also
the same
be in the
thing.
Hall of Very Good. The only one that was elite in this group was Ichiro.
I thought the exact same thing of CC. He had good years. He was the trade deadline year. He saved Milwaukee for a year. And then he played on the Yankees teams where he had some good years. But I'm like, overall, I don't think of him as like in the same boat as like those, like we were talking about, the superstar, big time.
Yeah, like how many years in his career would you have thought of him as a top 3 to 5 pitcher in the league?
One.
Yeah, that's not elite.
I mean, there's literally Cy Young voting.
I know, but I'm saying, like, he crossed leagues with Milwaukee when he went from Cleveland to Milwaukee. I think he had one big year with Cleveland and one big year with the Yankees as well.
He won the Cy Young once, which of course is just a league award. So it's just, you know, it's not the major leagues. It's American League National. He did with Cleveland.
Okay.
And then he finished third one year in New York. So he had two top three Cy Young years.
So those are the two I was thinking about. And then the year that he crossed leagues, I think he had a good start to the year with Cleveland. He finished
3.83 ERA.
And then he finished strong in Milwaukee.
Finished very strong. 11-2, 165 ERA in his final 17 starts. Did not start well, though, with Cleveland. I saw, what is it? I forget his Twitter handle. I think it's like the Astros Locker. Yeah, it's the Astros Locker. Just looked it up. He had this side-by-side comparison of CC Sabathia and Zach Greinke.
Oh, I saw it, too.
Pretty dang similar.
Yeah, Greinke should, if this is the case, Greinke should be in the Hall at some point.
Pretty dang similar. Yeah, the side-by-side stat head allows you to put, you know, two figures side-by-side. The, taking forever to load. The picture's not loading.
Well, they both have one Cy Young, right?
They have one Cy Young. CeCe has a championship where Greinke does not. Greinke has way more gold gloves. Not that that should matter, I think.
He's got a better, I'll tell you what would be a great one. Better batting stats. Those two guys both could swing the stick.
I don't remember CC a whole lot.
Oh, my God. He'd homer. Oh, he loved hitting. That was one of the, when he was a free agent, one of the things he was thinking about was he wanted to stay in the National League because he loved hitting.
Oh, really?
And then the Yankees offered a big bag of cash.
And he also said, I saw a thing yesterday. He did a MLB Network interview where he said, I hated the Yankees. I played in Cleveland. I never want to play for the Yankees. And I just didn't realize how great it was till I got here.
You usually don't have a great memory on pitchers hitting. So let's look this up. Let's put this to the test.
Normally my memory is pretty damn good on stuff that I pull.
You thought that Jim Abbott hit a home run. One arm Jim Abbott.
In college, he did.
did he have one arm at the time?
In college, he did.
I think
did.
He always had one. I think he was born that way.
Yeah, I'm joking. I'm joking.
Guess CC Sabathia's batting average.
Man, I don't know. He wasn't. He was only in there for half a season, right?
Yeah, he didn't bat much. He had 127 plate appearances in his career. He had some. No, remember Interleague.
He
did have some at bats whenever he was with Cleveland and when he was with New York. So 127 plate appearances. So Greinke would have way more than that.
I'll guess he hit 190.
Blankers.
210.
He hit Blankers is closer, but he went over, so he loses because of the Price is Right rule. 207.
That was pretty damn close.
Yeah, but you lose because you were over.
Yeah, I
how many homers? That. How many homers do you think Sabathia had in his career?
Three.
Yeah, three is a good number. But I'll play the game. I'll say four.
Good. He had three. He had three more than Jim Abbott.
I tell you what. But it doesn't matter what you call right. It's always going to be memorable.
No, good job. Good job on the three home run thing. Yeah, but the you look at like their all time WAR. Greinke 77.5. CC Sabathia 62. So Greinke, that's a pretty big gap in
Greinke,
just WAR.
I mean, Greinke was a stick. I mean, he loved hitting.
I'm talking about overall. So like this is like I'm comparing Greinke and Sabathia's careers now.
Oh,
Greinke had a 77.5 WAR. CC 62.3. They like games that they appeared in, 586 for Greinke, 561 for Sabathia. Game started, 541 for Greinke, 560 for Sabathia. So the innings pitched, Greinke's right at 3,400. CC's a little under 3,600. So, like, they appeared and threw about as many innings. Like, they're very comparable. 251 wins for CC, 225 wins for Greinke. Greinke, 349 ERA. CC Sabathia, 374. Greinke had a better ERA plus. CC had about 100 more strikeouts, but Greinke had a higher strikeout percentage. Championships won for CC, none for Greinke. All-Stars were even at six. Cy Youngs are even. ERA titles, two for Greinke, none for Sabathia. Six gold gloves for Greinke, none for Sabathia. Two silver sluggers for Greinke, none for Sabathia.
I would say Evander Greinke.
I think Greinke's a Hall of Famer.
Oh, there's no doubt. When I looked at that, the first thing I thought about is Greinke's a slam dunk.
And CC was a first ballot guy, like, what, 80-something percent of the vote?
Yeah, I don't get the first ballot.
I don't get 80-something percent of the vote. I guarantee you Zach Greinke will not be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Oh, there's no chance.
I guarantee you. You know, the bigger take here is that this is another example of East Coast bias. This is another example because this stat line for CC Sabathia, if he played his whole career in Cleveland and Milwaukee, he would not have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. He wouldn't have been. Do you know the only baseball player ever that was a unanimous Hall of Fame selection? Because Yankee. Ichiro Suzuki
Mariano
was
Rivera.
Mariano Rivera.
Yeah, yep.
East Coast bias to a T.
We talked about it yesterday. The fact of the matter is that you they'll deny it. But because the voting is still so screwed up anyway, and it's so you could have a grudge against a player and you could hold it against him, even in a case like this where you just don't do the no-brainer that everyone's going to do and make a guy unanimous selection. The voting is completely screwed up, but they can hold grudges, and it's ridiculous, and the East Coast bias was strong. Because a lot of people that are hammering Billy Wagner, he played in Philadelphia, he played in Atlanta, he played with the Mets. At the end of his career, he played with some teams where you could still see that his stuff. But when you look at the numbers on Billy Wagner, how do you argue with his earned run average and his, you know, all of his strikeout numbers and the different thing, all the different stats you pull is like, yeah, he is.
He's just really, it's really difficult for closers. Like, to me, it's very difficult to evaluate closers versus every other position because they at most throw 75, 80 innings a year. Like, it's tough. They're never in the Cy Young conversations either. Like, Billy Wagner, his best Cy Young finish was fourth. He finished top 10 twice.
The only reliever that I can think of in recent memory that's won the Cy Young was Eric Gagne with Dodgers.
Right. That was late 90s?
Yeah, like at least 15, maybe close to 20
years
ago at this point.
He won everything that year, didn't he?
Yeah, he won reliever of the year. Yep. He won Cy Young. And not to mention, I mean, to further your point, Jeremy, there about relief. Sorry?
03 is when he won.
2003?
Yeah.
But to further your point, because I think what we most look at for relievers, especially when trying to build a Hall of Fame case, is saves. But then saves is kind of a weird stat where you dig into it and it's, well, okay, would he have a 3-run lead with 7-8-9 coming up, or was it a 1-run lead with 2-3-4 coming up? I mean, it's a stat that I think has been overvalued. So even within what we value, there's a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah, I can understand how difficult it is for a closer. Billy said that he was the I'm not going to go through every Hall of Famer. I believe it to be true, though, because Wagner was told this by somebody else, that he's the first left-handed reliever to ever make the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Really?
It's what he said. It's what he was told by Somebody told him, I can't remember who he said, because I watched that interview with him and Brian Kelly on MLB Network. They had like a 7-minute sit down. Which
not
is why,
Kelly. What's his name?
I think it's something Kelly.
Yeah, is
I thought
it's
was.
It's not Brian Kelly. That's the LSU coach.
Yeah, it's, no, it's Brian
Kenny.
Kenny.
Brian Kenny.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. Billy Wagner's wife was murdered too. By the way, I dropped that on you guys.
What?
Yeah, it's weird. I forgot.
What recently?
I think it's been like within the last decade, maybe.
Well, because who was with him at the pool table when he got the call that was making the rounds? I don't know if he remarried.
Or... I don't think it was his wife's dad. No, his wife's dad is the one who got murdered.
Oh, wife's dad.
Not
I thought
wife.
You said wife.
No, no.
Okay.
Wife's dad. 713-780-ESPN. Let's sneak in Rudy real quick. Rudy, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up?
Hey, guys. I enjoyed the listening to the Hall of Fame talk. I wanted to ask a couple things. One thing I was concerned about that I saw, I was glad for Billy Wagner, for one thing. Congrats to him. I'm 61, so I can go back, you know, a ways. And I just think one thing that keeps getting mentioned, I like the Greinke comparison with CC. I agree. I don't know if he'll get on the first ballot, but I think he's a Hall of Famer. But I worry that the curve might be will ruin the Hall and lean a little bit too far to just changing the curve, the grading curve, so to speak. Because I think we need to go back and do some justice to like Dale Murphy and Vida Blue, and you know, so there's some people that were left off in my generation as a kid watching ball. Steve Garvey's not in the Hall, and I think he absolutely should be in the Hall. I don't know what they got against him, but he was just lights out in the playoffs. I mean, and if it wasn't for him, the Padres would have never made the World Series. But anyway, I could go on about the old guys, but Dale Murphy certainly should be in the Hall. I just can't imagine growing up watching baseball and he's not in that. But I did want to mention, I want to hear your opinion on Carlos Beltran. That really concerned me. He got 70%. I am an absolute advocate for not letting cheaters into the Hall of Fame. And this is
Would you put Altuve in, Rudy? Would you put Altuve in the Hall of Fame?
No.
Okay.
Wow.
No, but I'm the same. I grew up in southern Indiana and went to Riverfront Stadium, watched the Big Red Machine.
So would you put Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame?
No, I agree with
Johnny.
Attaboy,
Rudy. Yeah.
I'm serious.
I believe you.
I love Pete Rose. Everybody where I – but I go back to the historic – you know, I don't know if you watch Ken Burns' history on baseball. It had a great part on the decision to ban the Black Sox. And I know that's a long time ago.
Good movie.
We don't have a lot of precedent. But if you go back to the facts, Judge Landis was the commissioner of baseball. And just real quick.
Real quick. We got to go, Rudy.
Come on, Rudy. We got to go.
You got 30 seconds.
They weren't convicted in a court. He still banned them because it was right. All right. Take care, guys.
All right, Rudy. We appreciate it.
Thanks,
appreciate
Rudy.
The conversation.
I just looked it up and Billy was telling the truth. They said, according to baseball analysts, Wagner is considered the best left-handed reliever of all time, with Aroldis Chapman second, and all-time John Franco and Jesse Orosco in the conversation.
Where's John Rocker at? I feel like he should be in the conversation.
Not in the Subway.
713-780-ESPN. Texans offense. Third time we've teased this now. Third time to try. Maybe it's the charm.
Never quit.
I keep reading how they got it all figured out in these last few games. Are you actually buying that? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
This is ESPN 97.5, brought to you by Zadok Jewelers.
KFNC 97.9, HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston, a Gal Media station.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.